thank you so much for being here. After all this time, it was a minute. I have to admit, it was a minute. I also have to admit that for a second, I thought this was it. Like, this was the end of an era. I feel like I didn't need to do the podcast anymore, because it was one of those things that at the beginning when I started it, it really was a need. I needed an outlet. I needed to talk to myself, I guess. And then eventually I ended up talking to all of you. So I'm really glad I started, and I don't want to stop doing this again, because I love it and it really helped me mentally when I started. So yeah, in words of Taylor Swift, this is me trying. One of the things that I love, or one of the reasons why I love this podcast, is because it's a way to honor my feelings, or just to let them out. And right now is one of those moments in which I need to let them out. Oh, sorry. Am I recording? I think I am. Okay, cool. Cool. Okay, so as I was saying, right now is one of those moments in which I need to let them out, or at least I want to have something to look back on to remind me of how I am feeling right now. And, you know, just when I thought, oh, wow, I think I'm finally normal, this therapy thing is kind of working. Just when I was thinking that, I start feeling weird things again. And by weird things, I mean, it's one of those moments in which I feel really good, great, and really shitty at the same time. I feel like for the first time in a long time, I am not misplaced. I like where I live. I am enamored with the city, with my apartment, with the places I go to every day. I love my classes, my friends. I kind of get along with me very well, and I have been enjoying that now more than ever. But then, at the same time happening, at the same time, I have this issue, which is pretty much the same issue I went through back in July when I moved to Mexico City, which was the main reason why I moved. And I have not openly talked about it here yet, though there is one episode in which I don't tell you what it is, but I tell you how I was feeling. And I think it's called Forgiveness, and I can't remember, something along those lines. Something about forgiveness, because it was a time in which I had to learn how to forgive, because it was not doing it, it was killing me. But yeah, I've been really, really, really hesitant about to whether or not listen to that episode now, because it's really heavy, I think. And I wasn't in a... I didn't react the same way back in July. It destroyed me then. I was crying myself to sleep, but I wasn't really sleeping, and I was sad. And you know I love being sad, but not about things that are actually happening to me. Not when it's my heart that is breaking. That's not cool. Not fun. What is funny, though, is how different I am reacting to this versus the first time it happened. And there are things in life that I strongly believe in, and one of those things is that you can't get in a relationship, any kind of relationship, expecting not to get hurt. But you have to get in any kind of relationship expecting that you will be able to handle it when you do get hurt, that you will be able to leave when it's right. And if I've learned anything about what happened to me last time is, you know, that my heart got broken and I was able to handle it and I was able to leave, and I think I did the right thing. So now I am not losing any sleep. It hurts a little when I think about it, but I just don't think about it. I choose not to think about it because I rather think about all the good things in my life which fulfill me and make me feel freaking golden than to be upset over someone who is just an asshole. Well, that was not supposed to end like that. But anyway, I tried to describe this to my therapist, and I told her it felt like a permanent cloud over your head, which never goes away and it's just following you all day, all the time, but it never rains. So it doesn't really bother you, but it doesn't let like the light in either. And I'm okay with that, to be honest. The thing is, I react with my stomach. I'm one of those people and I don't want to get sick again. I like myself too much right now to do that to me. And I told this to my therapist also. And I was like, I know you're going to tell me that I should face my feelings and feel them and blah, 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 blah. But I just don't want to. And she was very supportive of it. So, yeah, guys, that's the thing. I'm not dealing with it. I truly believe that putting off my feelings is the right thing to do for me right now. And doing the right thing for you is the best thing for everyone, right? So that's where I'm at. But anyway, all this thinking reminded me of Matisse. Yeah, the French artist who I have an awkward relationship with for the entire time I lived in Paris. I never liked him. I always thought it was a lot of orange. I take it back now, okay? Please don't use that against me. But okay, so now 6 years later, I find myself looking for one of his paintings for a class about modern art, and I looked at it differently. The painting is called The Goldfish, and it's that goldfish in a, how do you call that in English? Like la pecera, like the thing where you put fish in? Fishbowl? Really? Okay, let's go with that. Fishbowl. Okay, so that's what the painting is. There is a lot of orange, but I still like it. I saw this painting and I got this feeling of ease and serenity, tranquility, and I felt this urge to print it and put it in my wall. If you know me, you know my wall. And if you follow me on Instagram, you know the wall. But anyway, I read about it and I found out that this painting was painted after Matisse visited Morocco, where he stayed from the end of January until April in 1912. And he noted how the local population would daydream for hours gazing into goldfish bowls. I mean, I don't have a goldfish bowl, but I gaze into other things on the reg, and I feel very grateful for those things. One of those things being, and also if you follow me on Instagram, you know I'm obsessed with the way the sun reflects its light on my window every morning. I think it's just glorious. Like, I don't deserve such beauty. I do think I hype it up a little bit. By a little bit, way too much. But I do romanticize my life quite a lot, and I'm okay with it. I remember this date I went on, and the guy asked me, we were asking each other like deep questions, deepish, and it's funny because we never got to a second date, but anyway, so we were asking ourselves like deep-ish questions, and one of those was, what is the best compliment you have ever received? And I wasn't prepared for these questions in advance, but I was surprised to know the answer right away. And something that I've been told, I don't want to say a lot of times, but definitely more than three times this year, is I love the way you see the world. I think that's the biggest compliment anyone can ever give me. And by the way, another painting by Matisse is relevant to this conversation right now. Well, I guess I should start by quoting him saying, to me, it's always new, which is what he said when someone asked him why would he paint the same thing 1,000 times. And one of the landscapes he painted a lot, not 1,000 times, but a lot, was the view from his studio in Paris back in 1919. And he said, and I quote, I never tire of it. For me, it's always new. And just now, it is more dear to me than ever before. The fact is, you see, that I was down by the Mediterranean for a couple months, and that enables me to look again with fresh eyes at Paris, which is always Paris. That is something indescribably glorious. To be sure, this little apartment here is inconvenient. But I have lived here for many years, I've grown attached to it, and I can't be without the view. Ah, oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, so I was doing some research also on Jean Cocteau. Oh, we're done talking about Matisse, by the way. I was doing some research on Jean Cocteau for a class, who was another French artist born in 1889. And I think artist is the best way to describe him because he did a lot of stuff. He was a painter, a writer, a filmmaker. And he said, "I have the right to jump from branch to branch as long as it's on the same tree." It's like kind of given himself permission to do everything and not, you know, being scared of trying new things just because that's what people think you're not good at, or like, or they think you're good at other things. But anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, he also said that the only constant identity is the one of transformation. And he believed that we're not entirely responsible for our artistic work, but that we are inhabited by a mysterious self, which is our true self. And I love that. I believe that also. I think we have to unbecome more than we have to become. But anyway, in one of his videos, he says that it must be a dream that one can live at ease in one's skin. And he says this right before he quotes Picasso, who is another French artist. No, I'm kidding. He's Spanish. Oh my gosh. Duh. I just got confused because his museum, or one of his museums, is in Paris. But anyway, I don't like Picasso either. Maybe one day I will. Anyway, he says it takes a long time to grow young. I'll say that again. It takes a long time to grow young. And I had to pause it and think. And I thought about, obviously, me being 24, and people making assumptions about me based on that number, and people in general making assumptions about people in general based on their age. And it got me thinking of age as a label, you know, like gender and nationality and sexual preference or whatever. Because if you're a certain age, you're supposed to like certain things, and you're supposed to hang with certain people your age, and do whatever those people like to do. And if you don't fit in with those people, or if you don't like doing what they do, then you feel like something is wrong with you, even if it isn't. And don't get me wrong, age is a useful thing, but it should just measure time, not define your time and what you do with it, I think. I can't remember the last time I knew what to do with my age. I think if you're not a kid, any other age is awkward. At least when you're really young. Like, I have a niece who I love, and she's 10. And she's really confused because she's not a little kid. I mean, she is, you know. She doesn't think she is, but we all know she is. But she doesn't feel like one. Also because she has a little brother who is 6, and that's a little kid. But she's 10, so she's not, or so she says. But she's not even a teenager yet. And then she will be. She will be 13, which, I mean, that is a tragedy in itself. I mean, you're still a kid, but you have boobs and hormones, and you get your period, and no, like, man. And then you're 15, 16, 17, 18, and you're a teen. You're on your late teens, I guess. But you're not an adult yet, and you still have to ask for permission to do things. But you can also not and just take the car and go anywhere you want to. And then you're 20, and you're in your 20s, and you're like, what the heck is life? I remember being 20, though. That year was one of the most formative years of my life so far. Not even when I was 18, and that's really when my life, like, changed and I moved to a different continent on my own. But no, like, it was when I was 20, because when I was 20, I met the most important people in my life. I got my first tattoo. I lost the V card, blah, blah, blah. I said, "I love you." Like, it was like my first adult, quote unquote, adult, because I was not an adult. Then I still think I'm not, I don't know, but like it was like my first like, oh, like I know, like I'm sure how I'm feeling. I love you. Not to the same guy, unfortunately. I had my first anxiety attack. I had my first jobs. I work in a travel agency, in a restaurant, in my university. I was drunk basically the entire time. It was a really fun year. And now I'm 24, and I don't know. And I don't know what the heck. I feel too young and too old at the same time. And I wrote that when I am with people my age, I feel like a wrinkled kid. But when I am with older people, with my older friends, I feel like Peter Pan. And the truth is, I don't like feeling either of those things. I don't think any actual smart / wise person feels comfortable being the smartest, wisest person in the room. I think if you are smart, you would want to be surrounded by people who are just as, or better yet, even more smart, smarter than you are. Because you would need people to challenge you and to make you grow. And otherwise you get bored and you start rolling your eyes way too much. And it's like, what am I doing here? Why am I spending time with these people? Blah, 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 blah. But then when I'm with older people, sometimes they think they're the shit and they are wiser and smarter than me just because they are older. And okay, so I have like my 30-something group of friends who I adore. And I have my 40-something group of friends who I love, and my 50-something group of friends who I love, which is the same group. We're five people. Two of them are 40-something, and the two others are 50-something. And then there's me, who's 24. And one of them told me once that I should never let anyone judge me by my age. And he said, they need to give you a reason as to why they are not taking seriously what you're saying. You need to ask them, like, are you more informed than I am? Are you more experienced in the matter than I am? Like, what is it that makes them better than you are? What experiences makes them better than you are? And age is not the right answer. Age is not the valid answer. Give me a reason. Like, and I will always remember that, to never let anyone assume I know nothing just because I'm young or younger than them. And oh, that was really sweet that when he said that to me, because we met in writing class, and I was really shy to read. I still am, but I was extremely shy in that class because they were all older than me, and I was like, I know nothing. Like, why would they listen to me? But yeah, he was very nice, and he said that to me, and now I'm saying that to you. You know, so pass it on. Okay, so. And to finish this episode, I want to talk about a little book that I read last month called On Earth We Are Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong. And wow, I am so glad. My life is better because I read this book. I am a better human because I read that book. It's just so poetic. And okay, I cannot stop talking about this. My two teachers were like, stop, but anyway. And the commas. Okay, as a writer, I use a lot of commas. My teachers don't really vibe with that. But I love to use commas, and he does it so beautifully that it just like, it makes sense. And it feels great to show someone like, see, like this is why I use them, because they can work, they're important. But anyway, not the point. I bring him up because one of the things I think about when it comes to grow up, it's and time passing by, is just that pain of time passing by way too quickly. So quickly you're not able to appreciate it and to catch it or whatever. So how as you grow older, you look back to your memories, and every time you turn around to see them, they are just farther away. And one of the things that hurt me a lot about me personally growing up is saying, oh, I lived in Europe for 4 years. And the more time goes by, the more those 4 years shrink. You know, when you're 22 and you have lived 4 years, 4 out of 22 sounds like a lot. But try 4 out of 50. Anyway. So this book, the title of this book, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous, I think talks just about that, about how temporary, how brief life really is, if you think about it. You know, they say that life is too short, but I don't think it's short. I don't think if you're lucky enough to be 60, 70, 80, I don't think that was short. But I think life is brief, because brief is about duration. Is that a word in English? It has to be. It's about duration, whereas short means it's about distance. It's having a small distance from point A to point B. Anyway, this is a passage from On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong. It's actually one of the last pages. Just when I thought, like, this cannot get any more beautiful, it got more beautiful. And I also cried reading this book. So if you want to cry a little bit, highly recommend. I am thinking of beauty again. How some things are haunted because we have deemed them beautiful. If, relative to the history of our planet, an individual life is so short, a blink of an eye, as they say, then to be gorgeous, even from the day you're born to the day you die, is to be gorgeous only briefly. Like right now, how the sun is coming on, low behind the elms, and I can tell the difference between a sunset and a sunrise. The world, reddening, appears the same to me, and I lose track of east and west. The colors this morning have frayed tint of something already living. I think of the time Trev and I sat on the tool shed roof watching the sun sink. I wasn't so much surprised by its effect. How, in a few crushed minutes, it changes the way things are seen, including ourselves, but that it was ever mine to see. Because the sunset, like survival, exists only on the verge of its own disappearing. To be gorgeous, you must first be seen. But to be seen allows you to be haunted. And that was it for today's episode. I can't believe I did it. I literally just did it. Thank you for listening all the way through. If you like it, let me know. Don't assume someone already did. You can find my Instagram in the show notes. So slide into my DMs. Please let me know your thoughts. I really want to know. Leave a review if you can. Okay, thanks again for sticking by. I promise I will be here soon. Bye. Okay, bye. Bye.